Opinions expressed during the drive time are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks again, Wendy, and welcome back to the Drive Time. Joining me in the studio is our good friend Rob Washburn, and we're going to be talking about the Sally Ann Salvation Army Christmas Kettle Program. Also, so much more that Salvation Army does here in our community. But before we get started with that, I thought this would be a really great song to play as our intro into the conversation. So here's the Vince Guaraldi Trio with Christmas Time. You may remember this one. It's from the Peanuts, Charlie Brown's Christmas. So we'll be right back. That, of course, was the Vince Guaraldi Trio from the Charlie Brown's Christmas. So exactly what we're talking about today is, of course, the Kettle Campaign for Salvation Army. There's so many programs, by the way. It really is one of those support agencies here in Northumberland County that just seems to just They seem to be able to do everything, Rob. What do you think about that, Rob?
I think it's a pretty amazing thing. You see them out the various kettles in the grocery stores and in front of the liquor stores and on the corners and on the streets. It's quite an amazing fundraising campaign. I don't know if you know this, Dave, but there are 2,000 locations across Canada that raise money at this time of year. And it all began in 1891 under Captain Joseph McPhee, who was a Salvation Army captain in San Francisco. And he saw a need down at the docks where all the ships used to come in and felt these men and needed some help. Mm-hmm. And he remembered back to a time when he lived in England and people used to put out cauldrons, literally metal cauldrons. And people would throw their change into them. And that's how it started. And he took that idea, brought it to North America. And then in 1906, the first Canadian kettle campaign was held. It started in St. John's, Newfoundland. So pretty amazing fundraiser.
Well, other things that they do at Christmas, too, and by the way, they offer Christmas assistance, various programs. Dates and times, of course, you can go to their website, by the way, which is sallyann.ca. Every Christmas, the Salvation Army provides assistance to over 800 families in this area. They're a Giving Tree member agency, so that families need only apply once for food and toys. Later in December, Christmas food boxes or food vouchers are picked up at the Salvation Army Community Church at 59 Ballantyne Street in Cobourg. At the same time, families can pick up Christmas toys from the Giving Tree at the same address. And for those families or individuals that can't pick up food and toys, deliveries can be arranged by the Rotary Club of Northumberland Sunrise. This can be arranged at the time of the application. If you live outside our area, there are other agencies, Brighton, Camelford, Peterborough, and Bewdley, who will all assist you. Applicants may only apply at one Christmas provider. So where to apply for assistance here in Cobourg? Well, 66 Swain Street, and that's families living in Cobourg, Camborne, Cold Springs, in the K9A area, Plainsville, Gore's Landing, KOK, 2EO, Harwood, Rose Neath, Hamilton Township, Baltimore, Centerton, and Grafton. In Port Hope, they're at the Community and Family Services Office at 74 Queen Street, Unit H. You can give them a call at 905-885-2323. Families living in Port Hope, Welcome, Canton, Perrytown, Elizabethville, Camelcroft, and Garden Hill. The phone number for the Swain Street office is 905-373-9440. Applications there's an application period every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from November 2nd through to December 4th. So I guess that's already gone by. In Port Hope, again, it runs Wednesdays and Fridays, as well as Thursdays. The deadline again is December 4th. So again, that's just one of the programs they've started off. They've also got something called the Good Food Box. Now, the Good Food Box is a large box of fruits and vegetables. It's delivered each and every month to the following communities: Alderville, Bewdley, Brighton, Camelford, Cobourg, Colburn, Harwood, Hastings, Port Hope, Roseneath, and Warkworth. Also new is the Good Food Bag, which is 8 to 10 varieties of fruits and vegetables which are available. Boxes may be purchased any time during the month, but must be paid for no later than the first Friday of each month. The cost is $15 if required. Subsidy is available for families with children. You can also ask at your order locations. The Good Food Bag costs $10. No subsidy is available. For questions on this and other things, of course, call 905-373-9440 or toll-free 1-866-865-0768.
It's amazing, Dave, when you think about it. I mean, in terms of a social agency within our community, I can't think of too many others that provide such a wide range of services beyond the county's social services department. I mean, it's truly phenomenal. They've got the, besides the Good Food Box, they've got a lunch program. They provide furniture and appliances mm-hmm. to people in need. They have the Coats for Kids campaign that they do every year so that young children and young adults can have a proper coat for the winter time.
Mm-hmm.
They offer money management courses. They help with medical and dental needs of people. They run addiction programs. I mean, it's pretty phenomenal when you think about the range and the depth mm-hmm. of the programs that these people offer. So every time you donate to that kettle, that's the kind of thing that you're giving towards.
Well, and just so that folks are aware, they are serving everyone in need in our community. That is their mission statement. Salvation Army exists to share the love of Christ and meet human needs and be transforming influences within their communities of the world. Their core values, there are three core values of their faith: salvation, holiness, and intimacy with God. Rooted in these three values are the seven core operational values, which guide all aspects of the Sally Ann in Canada and Bermuda. They specified Canada and Bermuda here. Compassion, we reach out to others to care for them. Respect, we promote the dignity of all persons. Excellence, we strive to be the best at what we do and a model for others to emulate. Integrity, we are honest, trustworthy, and accountable. Relevance, they are committed to the pursuit of innovation and effectiveness. Cooperation, we encourage and foster teamwork and partnerships. And the seventh core value is celebration. We give thanks by marking milestones and successes. But you know, folks, we need to remember another thing too. They're volunteers. The people who do a lot of these services, the truck drivers, for instance, who work 1, 2, or 3 days a week, all volunteers. Receptionists at their various offices, 1 or 2 days a week, volunteers. Food distribution. Soup time workers, 1 or 2 days a week. Those are all volunteers. These are all people committed to our community, committing to making lives better for everyone else. So when you are going by the kettle, and now the kettles are being set up where, Rob? Do you have any idea where those
locations
are?
I'm not sure
of
the exact locations. I know that there's some in the grocery stores. There's some outside of some of the larger retailers locally and in front of the LCBO, both of the locations and some corners.
So again, watch for those. The celebrity kettle is coming up this week. That actually launches this Thursday. If I remember.
Is that right?
That's
tomorrow. Do you know who's doing that?
That I don't know. I don't.
It's not
know.
You.
It's not me.
But
no,
you're a celebrity.
I haven't been tapped for. No, I wouldn't consider myself a celebrity.
I don't know about that,
Dave. Yeah, maybe a celebrity in the same way that Bruno. No, not even Bruno Gerussi's kind of celebrity. I don't know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think he was probably considered.
You'd be a little hard on yourself, Dave.
Yeah, I don't know about that. But either way, folks, you can contact the Salvation Army for more information. You can contact them to volunteer because they're always looking for more people to volunteer and to take part in their various programs. Now, I'm trying to get more information about the kettle program, about the launch of the kettle program.
If any of the listeners might know something, give us a handout. That'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely. Here's the story from, well, this is actually a few years old, so I'm not even going to bother looking at this one. Today we're talking about the Salvation Army. We're talking about the Giving Tree as well and all of these other things that we have had the luxury this year, Rob, of interviewing some really important giving people in this community.
Absolutely.
Salvation Army, United Way, so many other organizations that we've had here.
Hospital Foundation.
The Greenwood Coalition.
Absolutely.
You know, and all these different people. So you may note that there's a theme here in what we do on this program. We do tend to focus on social justice issues. I think not necessarily focus on, but we definitely want to make sure that they are brought to the fore. Because for so often, you don't hear from these people. You know, you hear from an organization that wants to build a new medical arts facility. Those people are getting the airtime. But the people that are struggling every single day of their lives, who are eking out an existence, not even a living in our community, and there are so many of them.
Yep.
And I just feel privileged when we get someone in the chair here that can really bring it home for us. But some of the services that they do provide at the Salvation Army really are just amazing. Furniture and appliances. Now, the furniture and appliance program is designed to help low-income households get furniture and appliances that are in good condition. Most of the items are donated from other families who want them to go to a good home. And they currently have available and hope to continue to have available many items in good condition that will help people who have a genuine need. The program would not be possible without the assistance of the Northumberland County Community and Social Services. So if you're a low-income individual and, you know, maybe you've just lost your place, maybe you've had a tragedy like a fire. Mm-hmm. We've seen that happen so many times in the last few years. And so you can get help. Now, there are no, we should probably think about who some of the sponsors are of some of these events, because I know that Sleep Country, for instance, does donate beds, for instance. I don't know if they're donating to us here, but I know that they do in the major urban centers, donating old stock product so that people can have a new bed to sleep in.
Absolutely.
You know, and when we talk about things like homelessness and we talk about getting people from the streets to inside and to independence, a lot of that would not happen, frankly, without the assistance of organizations like the Salvation Army. It's that simple. In Toronto, I mean, they run a number of missions. Here they run soup kitchens and also lunch programs for people.
Mm-hmm.
They've got the Good Food Box, as we mentioned earlier, so much more. Coats for Kids, especially as Christmas comes along, we need to think more and more of this. And we're going to let you think about that for a few minutes, folks, while we take our first break today. You are listening to The Drive Time right here on Northumberland 89.7. I'm your host, Dave Glover. With me, as always, is Rob Washburn. He is your professor of e-journalism at Loyalist College. Not your professor, perhaps, but our favorite professor from Loyalist College is Rob Washburn. He is our regular guest here on Wednesdays for Consider This Live. So as I say, we're going to take our first break. We will be right back. Welcome back to The Drive Time, everybody. With me, Rob Washburn. We are discussing the Salvation Army and all the wonderful things they do. Of course, the kettle program has kicked off. You can support the Christmas kettle program right now, actually. And the programs are there. It's one of their primary sources of revenue, too, by the way. So it's interesting for folks to realize that.
Last year, Dave, they raised $22 million across Canada in their campaign. It usually runs from about beginning of December for about a month. And their tally last January was $22 million. It's a lot of money.
That's across the country, though, right?
That's across the
country.
That's the
national
number. Not locally.
Do we know what they raised locally?
No, I don't. I looked around to see if I could find an article about how much they raised locally, and I couldn't find one. So I don't know the number.
Okay. Well, folks, there's an appeal here for a donation. As always, please consider helping us help those less fortunate by making a donation of money, goods, or your time. Your generosity enables us to extend a compassionate hand and encouraging voice to many who are in need. Now, donations can be check or cash. They can be made year-round at the Community and Family Services Office or at the Salvation Army Community Church at 59 Ballantyne Street in Cobourg. They have their annual Salvation Army appeal each fall. They send out an appeal to thousands of households in the community. I got one, actually, and responded accordingly. Mm-hmm. Their Christmas kettle drives. During the 6 weeks leading up to Christmas, you will see volunteers standing outside beside the familiar Christmas kettle. Please feel free to drop in what you can or what you're able to. And they also accept donations of clothing and goods, coats for kids, for instance, furniture and appliances, as we talked about. For information on the kettle, though, you can call Annual Pond. Maybe I'm pronouncing that correctly. They need members of the community to take shifts standing beside the kettles during November and December. Only a few weeks left in December now. 905-372-3832. That is Anul's cell phone number. If you want to volunteer to help with Christmas hampers, volunteers are needed to pack hampers and help with that during December. That's 905-373-3832. Or you can call, if you want to have an assortment of short and long-term volunteer positions, you can call Dave Alexander at 905-373-9440. So lots of ways to help.
And Cobourg helped on Monday night with their teddy bear toss. They held that. I also know that Cobourg Media, the young Graham Beer, he's doing some fundraising for them as well, doing a live broadcast to raise some money for them as well.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, I mean, a lot of people helping out.
Well, he's really really become quite an active participant. He and Chris Pelletier actually have done quite a bit in terms of bringing local news and local media to the fore here locally. I mean, we've got the local newspapers, of course, but online, other than Cobourg Internet and as I say, the local newspapers, there's really not a lot of information out there. That's why you can go to places like Northumberland View with Chris Pelletier or to Young Graham Beer's site there as well. So if you want to know more about what's happening in the community, those are just a couple of really great places to check it out.
Absolutely.
Anyway, you wanted to talk about something else today as well, though, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Speaking of fundraising, the Better Together campaign, that was the two women we interviewed 2 weeks ago. They are the ones that one of many groups that are bringing Syrian refugees to our area. You'll recall that they're hoping to bring six families, mm-hmm. to our area. They're trying to raise $200,000 between now and January 31st. The campaign was announced just yesterday. The cost to bring a four-person family to our area is about $34,000.
Mm-hmm.
If they're able to raise that amount, the government will match with an $8,000 grant to help out as well. So all the money goes directly to the families. So they're getting up and going, I guess, to get that money together, and hopefully we'll be able to help a family. Do you remember when they said they're expecting a family to arrive locally?
They didn't have a date, if I remember correctly.
Spring, wasn't it? March or
something? They were saying, yeah, probably somewhere in that. Well, not spring or March, probably near the end of, because again, they're trying to bring them here for the end of February at the latest, right?
Is that right? Eh?
Yeah, that's the
Okay,
that's the
I don't recall that part, but I'm glad you do.
So I believe that was the case. We don't have the show up on the podcast yet, so we will endeavor to get that up there as well. That was a good interview.
It's on on my site at consider-this.ca. It's definitely up there. It was featured for a couple of days. It's dropped down a bit on the page since there's been some other stuff that's gone up. But
well,
it's there.
The question we raised about who's doing the Celebrity Kettle, the Celebrity Kettle lineup has been set. Lineup on Saturday, December 12th includes Coburg Mayor Gil Brockeneer, Poet Laureate Ted Amston, Chief of Police Kai Liu, and Northumberland Peterborough South MP Kim Rudd. You can find the kettles and the celebrities at the Coburg Metro, Canadian Tire, Walmart, David's No Frills, and at Foodland here in Coburg. I don't know what the Port Hope locations are. Unfortunately, I didn't get those when I did my search. I don't know why. Maybe I'll be able to find those in my next round of searches through the ether web, as it were. But again, just some of the local celebrities who are participating in the Salvation Army Kettle Fund in Port Hope. Let me see who we got here, if it's even going to tell us, because I may not. Don't have the list for Port Hope, so I'll have to keep looking for that for you folks. And just a reminder that that program has kicked off. It is already started. It started a number of weeks ago, but the Celebrity Kettle Drive, which is the sort of big name one, I guess, that's where you're more pronounced citizens, if you will. Local celebrities who will be doing that kettle drive as well. And as far as Port Hope goes, I don't have those names. I do have locally for Coburg, but I don't have Port Hope for some reason. I wonder why that is. Oh, here we go. Now, this is an old story too. I'll tell you, the great thing about the internet is you can find the story, but oftentimes it's old. It's out of date. Anyway, so we'll keep you apprised on that as we go through. By the way, if you have any questions or comments on anything we're discussing today on the Drive Time at Northumberland 89.7, give us a call at 905-372-2321 or 905-372-2321. I believe we did get our callers for the Christmas tree, but I'm not sure on that. Did we get those calls, Joe?
We got one for today.
All right, we got a caller. So there's still one more person who can call in to qualify to put their name in the bucket for the Christmas tree, the family Christmas tree from the Barrett's Christmas Tree Farm. All you have to do is call in with the tip of the day, and your name will go in the bucket. You don't have to go on air for that either, folks.
Dave, you were talking earlier about the theme of social justice here on our show, and you and I get together, we talk about these issues. One of the things that is coming up is an initiative by the Greenwood Coalition. You'll remember our good friend David Sheffield, who's come and been interviewed here and talked about the various issues. He has started a lecture series called Community 101. And while it involves members of the Greenwood Coalition, it's also an opportunity for members of the public and professionals to come out and learn more about helping each other and ways that we can do that. They're trying to build relationship. It's sort of relationship development. How can we help each other? The monthly meetings of the Community 101 will involve speakers and activities and become a forum for discussion around becoming better neighbors. The first of the four-part series began last spring, looking at, among other things, healing through art and the state of homelessness in the area. And then they took a break over the summer, and the November meeting is focusing on self-care. They're having a therapist who worked on the streets of Toronto return to school and now counsels people about the outcome of early trauma as it relates to addiction and other life-altering issues. This is a woman, I guess, that is going to talk about the need for dealing with compassionately with others in need and to learn how to be compassionate towards themselves. So that's going to be held on December 16th. It takes place at 7 p.m. at the St. John's Hall at 30 Pine Street North in Port Hope. And it follows the regular community dinner that takes place at 6. And the public is welcome.
Well, great news. That is awesome news. So also today, there is an open letter, and that was posted, I guess, a few days ago, an open letter regarding refugees, Syrian refugees, from David Sheffield. So I'm going to read this letter to you because it's actually a very it's quite a nice letter, and Mr. Sheffield's quite an eloquent speaker, so it does not surprise me. It starts off, "Dear neighbors, during the past few weeks, as the Syrian refugee crisis has grown, acquaintances who know I'm an outreach worker among people struggling with homelessness and other facets of marginalization have been asking me this question. Why are we Canadians spending our resources to feed and house refugees from the Middle East when we have homeless and disenfranchised people already living around us? Shouldn't they come first? So leaving aside an exploration of who this passion to care for our homeless was hiding prior to the current crisis, I focus on either the question. He says here, I have hope, I tell them. I have hope that there will be a shift in the way we think about the other. I have hope that we'll land on an understanding that makes us act as if we're one people sharing one earth. And that said, I witness the daily struggles of people trying to meet their basic need for food and shelter, having fallen through the cracks of a helping system that is inadequate and inconsistent. Combined with a less than 1% vacancy rate for rentals, most of which are not affordable to a person on social assistance or disability pension, and a 5-year waiting list for rent geared to income apartments, a growing number of people are bunking it in their car, sleeping on a friend's floor, and in some cases, living out of doors. As an outreach worker, I encounter the most vulnerable population, those who are refugees from early trauma, abuse, and neglect, often suffering the effects of their coping strategies, often attempting to become invisible to avoid the stigma of a society that blames them for their current situation. These domestic refugees are of no less value than those fleeing violence and trauma in another context. And as they should, urgency and timing are dictating prompt humanitarian action on behalf of Syrian refugees who are risking all, leaving every sense of home behind them to escape imminent danger. And there are no reasons to believe that they're escaping a situation that was aided in its development by North American and European actions. But our shared common humanity should guide our actions, not guilt or perceived responsibility. The task at hand is not a small one, and our definition of shared human experience will be tested in coming weeks. We need new, practical solutions for housing that is affordable and safe. We need political leadership at all levels, along with grassroots support to values and prioritize the most vulnerable among us. That's the test. And my experience working in the grassroots level gives me great hope that we can do this, that we can extend our roof of welcome, and our table of generosity to include both kinds of refugees, domestic and foreign. I've seen many examples of our community responding to human needs, but through short-term charitable acts and longer-term structural change. My hope is that we act with a new awareness and sensitivity toward the other, quote, end quote. Our domestic refugees will be caught up in the wave of solutions being discovered as we welcome Syrian refugees. So an interesting perspective there. By helping those people, we in fact will create a basis to help the people that are here already. This is his hope. That's what I've taken from that.
I think you're right. And I think interesting how he describes people as being domestic refugees, mm-hmm. people who are homeless and have great need or have suffered trauma and are looking for a place to be within our community. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he's one of the strongest, most vocal leaders in the community to do that. There are many groups, that help out the various causes. How do you see it rolling out then, Dave? I mean, you're pretty sensitive to all the politics and to the ways in coming and going of various groups.
Well, because we have a lack of a comprehensive strategy with regards to homelessness in this country, we have a lack of a comprehensive strategy with regards to food security in this country. I think I'd have to agree with David here that the effort that's being put forth now to help these new refugees, mm-hmm. With housing, with finding health care, furniture for their new homes, in some cases a job, I think what we're doing is we are opening the eyes of many, many people. Because, again, you know, the domestic refugees, as he referred to them, are invisible. These people are marginalized to the point where they don't exist. And it's only through the glaring example of these refugees, these foreign refugees, and their need for help, that perhaps society will wake up to the need for help on the broader margins. And that, and maybe I'm just, maybe this is naive, maybe it's because it's Christmas that there's this wishful thinking here, but I think there needs to be a 180 shift in how we deal with people that are struggling. I mean, even the new federal government is talking about their tax shift. And Mulcair was pretty eloquent this afternoon when he said, well, that's great. You're doing some wonderful stuff for people who are earning, you know, $80,000 a year or more. The people at the top end of that spectrum will receive the biggest benefit annually of approximately $680. The people at the lower end will get $50. But the people from $45,000 a year up to that level will get, what did he call it? Chimery. Or I'd like to refer to it as bupkis. They're not going to get anything. Now, what they will get, because they're going to get rid of the UCCB, apparently, is access to more funding through a child or baby bonus kind of thing, which won't be taxable. So, again, is it enough, though? Is it enough to combat that income insecurity? Is it enough to combat housing insecurity or food insecurity? I would argue, as Tom Mulcair has today, that the answer to that question is no.
Well, interesting you should mention that, because I think one of the things that I could take away from recent actions by the federal government is that they are sincere in their desire to give a new outlook from a government's perspective as to the needs of people. They're prepared to create deficits to ensure that there is spending so that services and infrastructure is there, et cetera, et cetera. I was heartened today to listen to the beginning of the Royal Commission on the Missing Women.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that was very impressive was that before they put any parameters on this, they're going out to consult with the families of some of the victims to see what they would be looking for in this kind of report. So I think if you look there, I mean, I agree with you. There's lots of details that need to be filled out, and we see how everything rolls out. But there's quite a different attitude than, say, the last 15 years. And I think that's really seminal, is that, you know, you look at them, and this is they're moving in a compassionate, and they're trying very hard to acknowledge and see people and issues in a very human way. And I think that that's where it all really starts. And I think that's really what David's point is that, you know, even if we're looking at Syrian refugees or local people who have great need, if we can start to see people and realize that it's not just about me and what I need and self-sufficiency, that, you know, we've got to all do this together. And the more we share and the more we go through this together, the better things will be for all of us.
Well, I concur. I think the biggest shift has been this willingness for the federal government to actually acknowledge the existence of these issues. You know, the last decade, it's not like it's been ignored. Okay, these things have not been ignored. The opposition has been hammering away at these things for the last decade. But we've had a federal government that says, well, we really can't do anything. Yes, we know it's a problem. But other than the acknowledgement, that's it. There hasn't been we know there's a problem, and we're now going to focus on a solution. We now have a government that says they're going to be focusing on those solutions. Do we know what those solutions are yet? No, we don't. All we have is a lot of wonderful rhetoric. We don't have any concrete direction yet, but it has only been a little over a month, about 6 weeks since they were elected, right?
Yep.
You can't expect miracles in 6 weeks. But what we do have is a government that says they are definitely committed to helping the middle class, particularly, and those marginalized. And I think this effort that they're putting forth with regards to helping foreign refugees is something that, as David says, can be translated into assistance for our domestic refugees.
Well,
the other point that he made in his letter, too, and this is something that this government isn't doing that the other government did, is blaming people for their situations.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, we've seen, I mean, you know, the conservatives will always say this. Well, you know what? Get a job. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I remember protesting in the 80s against free trade and having people coming out of meetings at the Metro Convention Center where they were doing, you know, $1,000 a plate fundraiser. And I'd be out front protesting. And the first words out of people's mouths was, why don't you get a job? You know, not realizing, of course, that I was working full time as a security officer at the Hospital for Sick Children's, for goodness sake. I had a job. Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to ensure that not only did I keep my job, but that other people were able to keep their jobs as well. And with the free trade agreement at that time, the way it was being negotiated, I knew that wasn't going to be the case, much like the TPP now. But it's always been the same response from the haves, if you will, or the people that mm-hmm. believe that they are the better class, to tell people like us just to get a job. Well, you know what? When you have to work two and three full-time jobs just to exist, not get ahead, not make a living, but exist, then I think, seriously, there needs to be a rethink. And I believe that perhaps this new government, at least with the conversations I've had with our own Member of Parliament, Kim Rudd, I mean, this is something that is very important to the Liberal Party of Canada.
The one thing, though, is it needs to become important to the Ontario Liberal Party as well, because, I mean, they've talked a lot about child poverty. They held forums. There was all sorts of consultation about 18 months, 2 years ago, and it's come to nothing. And we hear nothing in the rhetoric of the provincial government and our own MPP in dealing with these critical issues. And I think they could take a page from their colleagues in Ottawa in dealing with this kind of thing. Because, I mean, certainly we get a lot of chatter, but we don't see a lot happening.
No, you're right. And again, it's a lot of wonderful rhetoric. They say the right things, but if you don't do the right things, it doesn't matter what you say.
And I mean, we did see a little bit of action on the minimum wage, but I mean, that only affects a certain group and has many repercussions within the local economy. But helping out those people that we were talking about earlier, those who are homeless, I mean, we haven't seen anything really happening to open up opportunities for the creation of affordable housing within our area or even in rural Ontario, if we want to go that far.
No, so we haven't. As a matter of fact, there hasn't been a single, there's been commitments in larger urban centers, but this goes to the problem that Lou Rinaldi has mentioned to me when he sits on his rural development committee and his municipal affairs committee, the fact that there is this position from urban members that poverty doesn't exist out here. Yeah. Oh, you don't have homelessness out there. You don't have people. But, I mean, you know, all they have to do is tour the local food bank to realize that that's not true.
Well, and we just saw a report recently that says more seniors are starting to use the food banks throughout the province as well. So, I mean, it's getting pretty desperate. And I think, you know, we need to see the same kind of action from the provincial government as we're seeing promised by the federal government.
No, definitely. Absolutely. That is without a doubt a very serious reality here. And again, you know what? It goes to that conversation that we had before when we had those representatives from CARP here. Mm-hmm. Because what we have seen, folks, is a reversal of fortune for the me generation. Mm-hmm. You know, this after baby boom me generation that came out of the 1980s and 90s, where people were more than happy to cut federal government programs, cut provincial programs so that they could get a tax cut and have more money in their pocket. Mm-hmm. And now when they've reached the point where they need those services that they didn't want to pay for during the me generation, all of a sudden they're we people. When me becomes we and there's no money left in the kitty, who do we blame? Mm-hmm. Well, you'll ask them and they'll say, hey, don't blame me, you know, and that's just the way it is. And it's funny because when we mentioned that during that interview, I can't remember the woman's name, but she looked at me and she said, you know what, you're absolutely right, because that is what happened. That is really what drove the ideological change in our democracies to getting rid of social security safety nets, to making it so that people stand on their own 2 feet by giving tax breaks, smaller government, all of these wonderful things. And what has it led to? It's led to less affordable housing. It's led to more expensive health care. It's led to less access to social services and social security safety nets. You know, David Sheffield spoke about people falling through the cracks.
Mm-hmm.
In a system that is truly caring, there are no cracks. You know, it's a polyurethane floor. There are no cracks in that floor. We're going to be right back, folks. We're taking our next break here. You are listening to The Drive Time right here on local Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio. I'm Dave Glover. With me is Rob Washburn. As I say, we will be right back. Welcome back to The Drive Time, everybody. Well, and you know, Kevin just reminded me, by the way, it's our second anniversary today.
Happy anniversary, Dave.
Hey, thank you very much. It was 2 years ago today that I sat in this chair for the very first time. And started just blathering away, and it's been going pretty good so far, I think.
Do you think so?
I think so.
What do you remember from that first day? Anything special?
Not really. Just
do you remember anything you played or said?
I don't.
What were the issues at the time?
Couldn't tell you.
2 years ago?
2 years ago, Christmas. Can't even remember.
Let me guess. It was about Stephen Harper.
There's a good chance that there was
that might have
something
been
about the federal government the federal at the government? Very, very least. Because, of course, you know, nothing. He was my favorite whipping boy. Let's be honest with ourselves.
So, highlights over the last 2 years.
Anything highlights of the last 2 years. Well, I had some great interviews. I got to say, I want to thank Rick Mercer, Dave McConaughey, and the folks over at the CBC, Andrew Gregg, all of the people who've made themselves available to us. You yourself. I mean, Rob and I here have been doing this for about a year ourselves.
Over actually. A year, yeah.
And so, just the opportunity to meet so many wonderful people here in the community, the interesting viewpoints that we get. I mean, I've had some callers call in telling me that I'm insane. I don't, really? You know what? I don't agree with half the stuff you say, but some, you know, I just want to listen, and that's fine too. You know, again, my goal with this show has always been the same thing: it's to drive conversation. It really is. And this is why I talk about things. I say it's the holistic political chat show, because something that you and I have sort of touched upon is the reality that so many of these things. I mean, we were talking about homelessness, for instance, and what the federal response is going to be to that very problem. That is a truly holistic issue. It's something that affects us at the very grassroots level. I mean, we're talking about where people live.
Absolutely.
That is ultimately a municipal, provincial, and federal responsibility. And that really is sort of the holistic aspect of the conversation we have. Because as politicians love to say, there's only one taxpayer, you know.
Well, there's only one of us living out here, right?
Yeah, apparently. But, I mean, the reality is it's very different for everybody. Everyone's life is very different. And I think part of what we do here is kind of highlight that. At least I like to think that's what we do. Maybe I'm crazy. But and I've been told I'm crazy, too. So I have no doubt in my mind that there are people out there who think. But, again, it's all about the conversation as far as I'm concerned.
Speaking of conversations, the one we had last week with Deputy Mayor Henderson. John Henderson seemed to have an influence. I don't know. Are we stretching it there to say that?
I don't think so. I think we raised a number of questions with him. He said he'd heard from other constituents. I had the luxury on the weekend of speaking with my sister-in-law, Teresa, about some of these issues. And again, it's as she said, it's always good to have fresh eyes on an old problem. And the more people, the merrier, really. And I think that's part of the reason why the decision was kicked down the road. One of the things that Ben Bird said in his Bird report this week was that the air had come out of their sails. You know, you could hear the big as the air came out of their tires, rather. And it seemed as though that the decision that had been made initially may not have been the right decision. At least that's what some of them are at this point thinking about and talking about. And maybe they didn't ask the right questions, or maybe they didn't have the right people there to ask those questions.
It's funny how there's sort of been a political shift in the paradigm. It used to be Port Hope was the one place you'd look to where there was sort of all sorts of decisions being made and things not being thought through carefully. And there was all sorts of craziness going on. And they've just calmed right the heck down. And it's over here in Coralburg, it's just cooking like a boiling pot.
Well, it's funny you say that because I was talking to one of our other volunteers, Mary Lou, here, and she went onto the Port Hope politics page and said, you know, what is going on over in Coburg? They seem to be the hotbed of discontent with their very active taxpayer association and their very active council and all the other stuff that's happening there. What's going on in Port Hope? Why have things sort of died off in Port Hope? But you've got an update. That trial's coming up, isn't it?
Oh, you're absolutely right. As a matter of fact, December 14th, thanks for remembering. Port Hope Trust, the case is going to court in Newmarket. On the 14th at 9:30 a.m., that this is over the $10 million plus interest that had been set aside for the former Hope Township.
Yep.
You remember this?
Mm-hmm.
And when the two municipalities amalgamated, that got put into a pot, and now there's been some technical questions about what's happened to the money, where is it going? Is
what
it
happened
used?
To the interest?
Absolutely. And it sounds like they've got the whole day in court. So do you think it'd be settled in a day?
I don't know. But I just remember when we had Bob Sanderson in here telling us it's something that could have been settled over a coffee.
Yeah, well, we've drank a lot of coffee since then, Bob. I don't know.
I guess they're having that coffee in Newmarket.
So, I guess they are.
So that's a very interesting point because, again, that's something that people thought, oh, it's just gone away. It hasn't gone away, folks. It's like that. It's like a bad penny, I think. It just keeps popping up. But other issues, too, in Port Hope, too. We've seen some staffing issues that have come and gone. We don't know what the full resolution is going to be on those, really, because those positions are still – there was a bunch of people that were let go. Then there were some other people that were rehired to fill similar but not the same positions. So a lot of issues with regards to governance in Port Hope. But we've now got our own government here in Coburg talking about changing the governance model as well. That's something else that John Henderson talked about when we had him into the studio. So,
absolutely.
It's very active, folks. Very, very active. And you know what? Again, this goes back to the me-we thing that I was talking about before. Because, again, back when during the gravy days, when things were going great and everyone was making a pile of money, nobody was thinking about the rainy day. Nobody was thinking about the rainy day. It's been raining now for probably, I'm going to say, 7 years. It's been a long rain.
Okay.
And now all of a sudden everyone's like, oh, no, we've got to think about this program and that program and everyone else. And you know, we talked about donor fatigue. That's one of the things that has led to donor fatigue. Because, of course, when we saw the collapse of the manufacturing sector in the province of Ontario, when we saw 300,000 jobs disappear, you know, we didn't get much sympathy from anyone else in the country. I remember the finance minister of the day calling us a bunch of freaking whiners, you know, and actually telling people not to invest in Ontario. And yet we've got a minister from out west, Brad Walsh, the premier out there, saying, oh, well, no one in Ontario or Quebec is too concerned about the 60,000 jobs lost in the oil sector. Oh, it tells you what kind of support they get across the country. Well, you're the same people that were basically laughing at the folks here in the east when they were losing their jobs. So how are you liking it so far?
Absolutely. And interesting, too, we had Linda Kay on here recently and was talking about their fundraising campaign. And it's fascinating that they've shifted it from being a dollar amount now mm-hmm. to how many people can we help. I think that is very, very symbolic for this community. I mean, it speaks a lot to how much people can raise, how much need there is.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a really good strategy to drive home the point that there is this massive need in our community.
Mm-hmm. And it has a face.
And absolutely. And there's all these different organizations trying to do all their best works to try and help other people.
Absolutely. Well, it's going to bring it to a close here, folks. We're going to end the show with John and Yoko and Happy Christmas, the War is Over, during this season of giving and remembrance. And you know what? It is the time. Remember, it's better to give than to receive. The feeling you get from making someone's day, I think, is just amazing. So here are John Lennon and Yoko Ono with Happy Christmas, the War is Over. And we will take it to a close. Stick around, though, because the Cedar Rail Gang is coming up at 7.
So this is Christmas, and what have you done? Another year over, and a new one just begun. And so this is Christmas, I hope you had fun. The near and the dear ones, the old and the young, a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Let's hope it's a good one without any fear.
So strong, the rich and the poor ones, the road is so long, and so happy Christmas.